We're turning now to what may be the ultimate in-between space, the place where life meets death. If you've ever had a family member in hospice, you know that it's kind of like being in limbo. They're still there, but in the background of everything anyone says or does is the fact that soon they won't be. David Slack spends a lot of time in this transitional space. He's a hospice and palliative care doctor for Kaiser Permanente in Washington, and he believes the end of life is actually a time of opportunity. New lines of communication can open up, and the people left behind at the bedside can be changed forever. He believes this so deeply that he started a nonprofit to spread hospice and palliative care around the world, starting in Rwanda. KNKX's Will James spoke to Slack at the Olympia office of his nonprofit, Hospice Without Borders. He talked about trying to make sure there's a little less suffering in the world, both abroad and at home.
Years ago, I was in Rwanda, and the nurse, you know, nurses always know exactly what needs to be done. And this particular nurse asked me to go out to see a patient who had late stage HIV AIDS and was dying. And, you know, it was a house call to go see this patient, but behind the scenes she told me that what she was really wanting was to know if she could stop her antiretroviral drugs. Okay? This was somebody who was very poor, you know, lived in the slums of Kigali, and we went out to the house and we conducted the visit, and at some point we're getting ready to leave, and then all of a sudden the patient asked me in front, you know, of the family if she could stop her medication. And this was so obvious because, I mean, this patient was so close to dying, could barely move a limb. I mean, in fact, the patient did die that night. But I said, yes, you could. And it was one of the most astonishing visits of my life, because this person then all of a sudden just looked at me, barely said a word in the entire visit, but just thanked me, and thanked me in English. Did not say murakoze, which is the Kinyarwandan word for thanks, but actually took the time to speak English to me and said, thank you.
What do you think was happening in that moment when she asked you whether she could stop her medication?
I think what was being asked of me as the only doctor in the room was, I'm feeling like I'm going to die. I want to somehow have my family understand that it's okay for me to die, because that's what's happening anyway. But if somehow you as a doctor could say it's okay, then my family could maybe think it's okay, and they could sort of accept that.
Of all the medical disciplines you could have gone into, what attracted you to palliative care?
Well, I think, you know, there was something percolating inside me from when I was a young boy, and that was the experience of being around my grandmother's death when I was about 12 years of age, and how my mother took me through that experience. And rather than it being a terrifying or frightening thing for me, you know, my family, my mother in particular, made it really safe for me. My mother took me to the bedside by the hand and said, this is the day your grandmother's going to die. I want you to have an opportunity to say goodbye to her. And so she took me right by the hand, and we just had her on a fold-out bed right in the living room. So she took me up, and I could even see something had dramatically changed from even the day before. So I said goodbye, and my mother told me then, you know, that your grandmother can hear you, David, so say goodbye and give her a kiss. So she kind of guided me. She kind of midwifed me through that process, my own mother, you know. So there was that. There was that piece of sort of the sense that our loved ones are with us all the time. And there's this opportunity to say our piece with the people we care about. So my grandmother, I should say, was a devout Baptist, right? My uncle was a devout atheist. And so this was a bit of antagonism between the two of them. But on the day she died, from the corner of the room, I witnessed my mom and my uncle get in the bed. And then I, in particular, watched my uncle put his head right in the crook of her arm, and he wept like a baby. And I think the thought I had was just, I mean, I don't know, I was 12, but it was sort of just amazement in a way, that it seemed like healing. And he looked like a little boy again in his arm Whereas before, he was always this towering, larger-than-life figure telling us how things were in the universe, you know? You know, it's important that we take care of those people that are dying, that they matter every day just because of who they are, and we're going to do what we can to make your journey better, right? But what also really matters is the memory of how our loved ones die, because that's the thing we carry with us.
Is that something you think about now, giving caregivers a positive experience with death?
Absolutely. I would say that's probably one of the most important things we're trying to do, actually, especially with the work in Rwanda, which, as you know, is this country that in 1994 suffered a terrible cataclysmic war that left essentially 1 million people dead in 100 days and traumatized an entire country vis-a-vis its relationship with dying and suffering, you know. And it has the effect of closing people, not wanting to talk about feelings, not wanting to talk about emotion, you know. It's kind of protection, because that trauma, that historical trauma phenomena, it percolates across the generations. And so we wanted to create a kind of counterpoint to that. And I think one of the things that really invested me in the idea of forming some kind of structure, like a nonprofit organization, around improving access to palliative care in developing countries, Rwanda in this instance, had to do with a particular patient encounter and the difficulty getting pain medicine for that person. Okay? So when I was there in 2010, we did encounter a patient who had a gastroesophageal, presumptively cancer. There's not much diagnostics, actually, but that was the presumption. We were able to just isolate a few morphine tablets when we were in the country at one of the private hospitals called King Faisal Hospital. And we went out and paid this woman, whose name was Dina, she's long since died. We paid her a visit, and she had come from the villages to stay with her brother in Kigali, thinking that she could get, you know, excellent care. And she did go to the hospital back and forth a little bit, and then finally the family brought her back to this home. And the brother said, well, we're just going to try to care for her here. And so we got this medicine, we went into the house, and it was really something. And we were all surrounding her, and before we gave her a dose, the nurse asked, what is it you're hoping for? And the patient said, you know, what I'm hoping for is that if my pain can somehow be improved a bit, maybe I can sit up out of this bed and sing to God. And so, like, 20 minutes after she took this medicine, I don't know if it was the morphine, although that is about the time to onset, if it was the morphine or it was our presence or both, something bigger, she did. She sat up and she sang this beautiful kind of classic hymn, Rwandan hymn, and I can still hear it in my head all these years later. And, you know, that was her goal of pain control. And, you know, to come into a room like that, see it unfold in front of you, I mean, it was like a miracle to me.
How do you define success as a palliative care doctor?
I think if I am able to meet people where they are and stay present with them to whatever their particular suffering is, and then that I come back, and I come back, and I come back, that's success. Because I can't change ultimately the final outcome for these folks, but I can take the journey with them. As a physician, we have to come to terms with the fact that in spite of our great, wonderful treatments that can help people live longer lives, in the end, death comes to all of us. In the end, there comes a point in time where people have to return from being patients to people again.